Ooh, this episode is going to make some people uncomfortable. For no reason. Because sex is how you got here. Not to this podcast, necessarily, though, if that is the case, make sure you include that in your iTunes review. Today we're going to talk about the taboo. Where sex and hypnosis and forbidden fantasies meet. Sexological hypnotist Kaylee Dubois and Douglas Alexander join me to discuss trancing you into pure bliss. It's Open Loops. Your unconscious mind is now tuned in, plugged in, focused. Let it all fade away, as it's time to pay attention to your favorite late night talk show for the shamelessly fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. Hello, everybody. Greg Bornstein here. Consciousness disruptor, looper, curator of experience, and cultural hypnotist. What does that mean? You're listening to Open Loops. And what in the world is an open loop anyways? We'll get to that in a little bit. You see, my goal on this show is to challenge your existing belief systems by sharing radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind and force you to step into the highest version of yourself. Though I'm starting to think maybe force isn't the right word. Empower you. Sounds fluffy these days, right? Still, you hear thoughts like this in this episode, you're going to be forced to think differently. Because this episode, where we talk about hypnosis and sexuality, fits into a broader category of topics that the show covers. That's right, the things that take us away from it all. The fantastical, the secretive, the mysterious, the unexplained, the esoteric, the metaphysical, the conspiratorial, the hypnotic, the magical. And of course, answering the deepest questions of them all, who and what we really are. My guest today, Kaylee Dubois, and her co-trainer in Europe, Douglas. Both of these two delve into realms that are perhaps hidden. I'm thinking about how this week a lot of people in the NLP, that's neuro-linguistic programming, in hypnosis community have had two online summits back to back. There's the Hypno Summit, then there's this NLP Summit. I have to tell you, This is what happens in the hotel rooms at night at those conventions. If you're a fun person, that is. Because that's the whole message in this episode. These two are sexological hypnotists, and they believe society has been denying themselves pleasure for too long. So they work with people in trance and out of trance to maximize the sensual experience. And isn't it interesting that the word sensual has senses in it first? That's because that's what this whole thing is. That's what their view of sexuality is, that it's a full body sense-enhancing experience. If you sit and think about the experience of your life where you're activating all your senses at once to really live through each moment, well, coitus is definitely up there. Both of these two also specialize in working on a variety of other issues too with hypnosis and NLP. But I wanted to have Kaylee on because she is so well-versed and such an advanced practitioner of flirty, filthy mind control, I had to know more. I was curious about it. I was curious how she became who she is today in her background in hypnosis. And let me tell you, I thought this conversation was very dynamic. Douglas's contribution was great too. Both two people that came from quote-unquote regular professions and then completely went into this because it brought them more life. Very interesting talk about hypnosis in this, talking about copywriting, about everyday trances, about how people these days aren't really connecting with each other. It's all the stuff that I really love to reflect on in society. And you know I'm an advocate for hypnosis. If you've listened to this show, I am a big fan of the hypnotic arts. And these two live in that realm of, here's what I call it at the end of the episode, conscious escapism. If you enjoy these mind-blowing topics, please make sure to share this podcast with anybody in your life that, hey, needs to just let it go and get back into the groove of things. Also, to get these kind of messages out there, it would definitely help if you followed this podcast on Apple Podcasts, as well as rate the show and leave a review. Even a few words definitely helps get this content out there. All right, I warned you, this episode wouldn't be suitable for work, but you're all working from home anyways, and there's a reason most of you keep your Zoom cameras off in those meetings. All right, here they are, Douglas and the legend, the queen of sexy trance herself, Kaylee Dubois. Here we go. Today on Open Loops, Kaylee Dubois, the founder of the Hypnosis and Sexuality Institute, along with Doug Alexander, Professor Douglas Alexander. He runs the European branch of this institute as well. We're going to go into, Kaylee delves into all sorts of different things. It's using sexuality and hypnosis together, just teaching people regular hypnosis, mind control. There's a whole lot. She's an expert in a whole lot. So I'm excited to delve into it. Thank you both for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kaylee, your background is so interesting to me because you are, well, I wonder what came first. What came first for you? What did your interest in the psyche in the mind, or did your interest in sexuality?
Well, it goes back to about age 4. I grew up on a dairy farm in the Midwest, and I had lapses in time, meaning I have memories that I can't quite put my finger on. I would find myself out walking the fields late at night, sleepwalking, a somnambulist, to the point where my parents would call the police because I'd be miles and miles from the house. And that's what really got me into learning about hypnosis. And then, of course, diving more deep into it as I got older, in ways in which, like, I utilized it for my own health concerns. I was going to law school and dropped out of law school because of some health issues that I had with my lymph nodes, in which I tried every doctor known to man to figure out what was going on with me, and just resulted into working with hypnosis to release the lymph node swelling. So that's kind of my background with hypnosis. Sexuality is a totally different story. I have been studying hypnosis since I've been a little kid. What about you, Douglas? How long have you been studying hypnosis?
I could say actively in hypnosis, I've been around 5 years. Although as a trainer, I came across hypnosis quite by accident after studying some NLP, for example. I was interested in NLP. I was working as a trainer, and one of my clients was like, you seem like you've done some NLP. And then I was like, what the heck is NLP? That could have been around 10 years ago or something. And she introduced me to NLP. And at that time, working as a trainer, I was like, wow, there's some technology for the mind where you can help people, you know, to fix the issues of their life and, you know, get fit in the sense of like physical fitness, but then just by working on their mind. That's how I got interested in the, like, what are the roots of it and NLP, and I got into hypnosis at that time.
And yeah. I
really delved deeper into it.
Yeah. It's endlessly fascinating. I still think it's so interesting after all these years.
Yeah, yeah. And then, that's beautiful. I went on to train with Dr. John LaTourette, John Grinder, Michael Grinder, who's the brother of John Grinder, the founder of NLP. I trained heavily in martial arts ever since I was a young girl. And then went on to train with Dr. John Lutcher every day in his dojo. He's a sports psychologist and NLP trainer, known as the Speed Man.
I was going to ask about him. He is someone that comes up a lot in the community. I mean, there are tons of people that mention, I mean, David Snyder, who's very popular right now, obviously talks about Dr. John. I've heard Tom Vizzini. I mean, people that I have studied over the years talk about John LaTourette. And I've never understood what the connection is between the mind piece and the hitting piece, that the martial arts piece. What is your take on him? How does he put it all together?
Well, I'm like a surrogate daughter to John, also known as Doc. Motor skills development, you know, utilizing NLP from a perspective of, you know, how to build in proprioceptives and awareness that most people really aren't paying attention to. He's taken things and broken down different behavioral structures in aggression and situational awareness, as in, like, let's say getting burglarized, you know,
right.
Mass attacks, things of that nature. Yeah. And I remember being one of his students and we were doing mass attacks. I got pretty high up in the ranks. Like, I was one of his black belt instructors. And, you know, the interesting thing about Doc is he was very detail oriented. He is also a linguist. He speaks five different languages.
Wow.
So, So our martial arts was broken down into like Korean and different styles and forms, but not just forms. It was about peak performance. And as you know, NLP took something that was as subjective as hypnosis, something as creative as hypnosis, and broke it down into easy steps. And that's what John does with something that's as powerful as his styles of martial arts and also psychic skills development. He's really into psychic skills development. The beautiful thing about him is that he is very persistent. He's very prolific. He never once stopped. And there was a lot of times when the, you know, different, you could say, Chinese mafia and other types of, you know, people wanting to duel him would stop by. And, you know, he was faced with derision a lot of the time over his years. But he's one of the old time guys. I mean, he started writing copy and studying NLP back in the 80s. He started writing copy in the 60s. He's old.
Wow. I was going to say, was he there with... I don't know if he was over in California and Santa Cruz with all those guys, but it feels like he must have been there very early on in the development of this mind technology.
He has things memorized. He just behaves in certain ways that he can't not be an NLP trainer, you know? I think that's really what makes the beauty of it. I've never seen anyone as persistent, you know, throughout his lifetime, you know?
Yeah.
So if we can take anything from him, we know that, like, this is how a great grandmaster has moved forward in their life. And And that's the beautiful thing about it, you know?
Yeah. So, you know what, Kaylee, yeah. I have to ask, I'm very curious because I've definitely talked to people that they talk about, I mean, I've heard people talk about John Grinder, but I've also heard people talk about Bandler, and with Bandler's at least miracle moments in seminars with him, things that just happen. He says things and all of a sudden you don't even realize you're in a trance, or you, something that you didn't even realize was happening inside of you just bubbles to the surface. Do you have any memories of the Speed Man doing something that you would describe as magic?
Yeah, I mean, every day. I mean, never turned off. He is the Energizer Bunny. You'd walk in and you're his guinea pig. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that's the beautiful thing is, for me, it's state regression. I can go back and have these very vivid memories of him and I connecting. But yeah, I mean, like, just technique after technique, things he was developing. I mean, there was a reason why he had a dojo, so he could have lab rats. I don't think this man was never not doing something. He was always up to something. I don't know if it was good or bad, honestly. Most of the time, he was just curious. He was just curious as to what he could get away with. And made a lot of us very prolific, and a lot of people who had natural inhibitions, you know, kind of go the opposite way at the same time. You know, there's a lot of people who have secondary gains and or were spoon fed or taken care of as a child. So becoming a peak performer or becoming self-responsible or a cause is kind of against some people's natural grain.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
So, yeah. So there are some people that would definitely skyrocket and other people would fall under his watch, you know? So it really depends on their background. People who strive for more, who had different certain types of meta programs, like the 1%, you know, the entrepreneurs that would do anything to do whatever it takes to build their company or have a life that they, you know, wanted to live. But he's an interesting character. Yes. Moments of aha. He did some pretty good techniques with timelines, you know, getting people associated and disassociated from timelines. I say timelines and were definitely his bigger suit. And yeah, he was just an amazing trainer, and I'm very lucky to have spent like almost, you know, days and days and days with him.
Amazing.
Years. Yeah, I moved to Oregon after graduate school to be with him. So I was at the dojo like Monday through Sunday. So like 7 days a week. Yeah.
Doug, yeah, I know you were, it sounded like you were about to say something. Was there something that Kayla was saying that you relate to, or have you studied any of the doc's work?
Not directly. I'm coming from the background of the martial arts too. So most of the stuff she says there resonates with me so deeply, because in the martial arts, you know, people don't talk about it, but you find hypnosis also in esoteric kind of martial arts. I mean, something like ninjutsu. So in ninja, or starting to be a ninja, part of it is there's some ninja hypnotism, which you don't hear about. It's called Sai Ninjutsu, which is you know, as a way of like hypnotizing people in a fight or something. And most people use it anyway, like in the mixed martial arts, you know, but people don't, you know, they don't even know what they're doing, really. So,
yeah. Well, this is what is interesting to me. I feel that, and I love that you're delving into some of the more, shall we say, I don't know, the edges of hypnosis. A lot of people are just hypnotherapists, or they're you know, they're using their NLP practice. It doesn't even mean anything. But the thing that I find consistent about, especially your work, Kaylee, is that you're saying, no, there can be some dark stuff that's done here, but also there's some fun stuff that's more recreational and taps into this this esoteric aspect of what these mind technologies can do. What were you about to say, Kaylee?
Back to esoteric psychic skills, psychic sexuality. I got into sexuality later on, more so by studying Ingo Swann and Elmer Green and the Mahatma monks. I was building copper wall rooms in order to meditate in front of them, see how much I could expand my consciousness, and was involved in a lot of tantric communities at the time. And now they were sex cults, from what I understand as I got older.
Oh, wow.
Communities I was into. So yeah, I went back in later in life, like almost 20 years later, to figure out what was going on from a deep structure, right? So I've been working on a biography about the sex cults I've been in. But when we talk about esoteric, using hypnosis to reach a level of ecstasy, a level of psychic skills development, it is possible. I have written a couple books on this. I don't really publish my materials. They go back into the vault. I've written 32 books. I've written 32 books. I've invented over 300 different programs. And I, you know, honestly, like, the big thing here is I just don't like publishing my content all the time. I'm kind of like Prince when it comes to hypnosis.
Right.
I've never really cared about being super prolific, but I just always have curiosity. So I go back into the room, my office, and create new and different trainings, thinking about how I would do things. I think Doc is definitely my mentor on that one. He showed me what it was like to have curiosity. Because without curiosity, you're not going to create or invent new and different things that would either expand your consciousness or your ability to make money or better sex or health and weight loss. And a lot of people have asked me, how did I get down to 96 pounds, 3% body fat for all my competitions and hold it for 4 years, you know?
Right.
How'd you do that? How did you stay so strong? And I always tell them, hypnosis, you know, hypnosis, good mind control.
You know? Yes. Yes. So. Do you think, I think it is. I mean, look, I know you've dedicated your life to it. And part of the reason I started this show was to be an advocate for this. I love hypnosis. It's been a doorway for me. I think I've always been obsessed with it. And then once I realized how real it was and how powerful it is, I needed to just keep going down the rabbit hole and really learn about it. I think it's the answer for, I mean, I'm biased here, but Reiki, I feel like you can do a lot with hypnosis. Let's see, other manifestation, law of attraction stuff. Yeah, you can accelerate that with hypnosis. So much, I think, can be done with it, with this tool set, that I still believe it is underrated. What do you think?
Yeah. And I also think that what happens is when we use the word hypnosis, or, we have a definition, you know, in our mind of what it can and cannot do. And I don't really think of it as the term hypnosis anymore. I can't, because it's such a wide array of variations and techniques and patterns. It's almost like when we define something, we have a tendency, especially in the United States, to think of it being bogus, a person with a watch, you know, but they don't realize that it is so much more than they think it is. And what they can do and how they can program themselves to do more feats or make more money or whatever it might be that they want. And in the end, you know, let's, you know, with sex, I mean, we're all stuck in an inhibited, you know, I don't know, in our culture, we're very, very inhibited.
Right.
Very inhibited culture. So it's about industrialized and,
yeah. No, it's messed up. I mean, I think it's messed up. Yeah. What are those articles saying, that less young people, I mean, look, I suppose that perhaps the right wing must be having a field day when they see an article that says this Gen Z is having less sex than ever and less sexual. Okay, score for the religious. But at the same time, we all know collectively that I don't think it's just sex that is going down. I think it's intimacy that is going down. And being intimate with people, even in your 18 through it, once you're 18 and over, especially when it's legal and whatnot, that's an important part of self-expression, an important part of the human experience. You know, I mean, I know that, Kaylee, you do a lot of programs where you're helping men of really all generations with things like erectile dysfunction and premature ejaculation and stuff like that. But I'm afraid of the people you're going to get 10 years from now. Do you ever think about that? What's going on with sexuality in this country and how to, I don't know, get people actually looking at each other in the eyes and maybe even smooching again?
Yeah. So, I mean, yes, I have thought about it. I actually was building a platform, a dating platform in Silicon Valley for 4 years to get people learning interpersonal skills, because we're lacking them and we're lacking trust. And we have now, all these gender abnormalities that are happening, not saying that they're not normal, but we're in a time of crisis of identity with our sexuality.
Yes.
And it is now become a crisis. It's a state of emergency, because at the identity level, if you look at DILT's neurological levels, that's one of the highest levels to be. So we don't know who we are, and we do not have a definition of how to be and how to act in the world. So it's a lot of creativity. And when there's not standard set rules of behavior, that's when people can go all over the place. And it's bound to either become a disruptive movement where it's forever going to change politics within things like the school districts and classrooms, and who knows, walking down the airport and seeing an all gendered bathroom, no matter male or female. I think that we as a culture just don't know how to identify anymore to anything. And I also think I think a lot, especially sexually in particular, because there's so much. It's just all consuming. We have so much pornography on the internet that people can't make an honest living, can't make an honest living anymore being porn stars. They used to be able to make an honest living being porn stars. We had people like Nina Hartley, you know, making six figures being a famous porn star. We had, you know, male porn stars that we all know of. You know, their names were like brands, like Tide. You know, what's happening is that we are over-sexualized, we are overstimulated, and because we're overstimulated, we have now grown disassociated. And with disassociation, there comes an identity that we can't really define who we are. And, you know, marriage and divorce rates, and we have all this protesting and hashtag Me Too's, and it's so overwhelming that people have a tendency when they're overwhelmed to do what? They hide. So they like retreat internally. And I think that's why there's a lot of people not having sex. So I think a lot of people are opting out not to have relationships because of the massive overwhelm in our culture right now. And the fears of being emasculated because of hashtag Me Too, or being raped. You know,
right.
And that goes back to like anchoring to like our beliefs about like every man with a mustache is going to rape us, because, you know, 7 years prior, there was a man that, like, you know, did something scandalous, either grope us at a bar, you know. So now our filters and our frames around the experience is defining who we are. And like I said, I think we're in massive overwhelm. And I don't think we have a way to identify with anything, because there's just so much information being pushed through us. And we're interconnected through the World Wide Web and social media. And if one fad happens one day and the next, you know. So I think we're really screwed up right now.
Yeah. You know? Is it as bad over there in Europe, Doug? Is it that bad over there too? Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I see it too here also, like with my own kids. Yeah, so it's like this identity thing, because here it's kind of like it's shoved down your throat. You have to accept, you know, whether it's natural or not natural. What's the issue of sexuality, for one thing, yeah, which is a great underlying factor of almost everything. No, not almost. I could say all life, because, you know, without the sexual part, then, you know, nobody would be around. You know, if a man didn't sleep with a woman, in that sense. And although we can say, you know, science and all this stuff, and, you know, we've advanced to the point of having artificial, you know, artificially made human beings, so to say. Yeah,
that scares
Europe,
me.
It's quite something, which is even in, you know, from kindergarten, you know, you see there's being taught about sexuality, but then in a kind of standoffish kind of way, like as if it's not a part of being human. You know, you can't discriminate, you can't, you know, you have to accept everything, you have to, you know, then it's like, I could say there's a big kind of mix up, like what Kelly is saying there. And part of it, that's where I see, like, it's not really acceptable to speak sexuality openly. For example, something like just mentioned, erotic hypnosis. Yeah. And like what Katie was saying there, first of all, the word hypnosis itself is very misleading.
Yeah.
Because in real sense, you know, the guy who came up with it, he tried changing it later because he was like, it's like this monoideism, you know. It's the monoideism did not really resonate with anybody because he had already said, "Oh, hypnos, like the god of sleep or something," and nobody really know the backgrounds of hypnosis, how it came to be or how it is. And recently, I came across something very interesting. It's saying like people mistaken, like, what's the oldest profession, you know? And, you know, people can just laugh and say, oh, the oldest profession, you know, we all know the oldest profession. They say, no, it's not. The oldest profession is hypnosis. Because in the story of creation, you hear, like, God put Adam into deep sleep and removed the rib from his...
That's a good point. I've never heard that.
So that was a really good thing. So I was like, wow, I never thought of it in that way. So I could say the concept of hypnosis in the sense of like it being not what has been defined to be, or what most the I could say the general media is made to believe, like hypnosis is this kind of you know, weird thing. It's just a name that doesn't mean anything, and that's why people say, "Boom, hypnosis doesn't exist. Hypnosis is just a word. It's just a word." And the problem of words are, They limit. When once we define something, we kind of set a boundary. We kind of set a perception of, oh yeah, this is it, because then we have something we can hook on. Yeah, in the sense of like, this is it, and you know, we put a kind of a frame around something. And if we are willing to look beyond that and see, like, what is the bigger issue here of being, you know, open, or being aware, in other words, you know.
So what I do a lot as well, something that I don't know if you're familiar with my work, Greg, is that I like to expose people who are doing language patterns in a corrupt and evil way, especially after I got fucked with a little bit my social media. I lost 90,000 fans because I got botted by a lover, you know, long story.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Long story. This is what happens when you date in Silicon Valley, you know, engineers, social media followings deleted overnight, phone hacking, things of that nature, privacy invaded.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. Cybersecurity attorneys. So anyways, so what I do is I recently was in conversations with someone that is actually an expert in phobias for hypnosis and teaches them abroad. He's over in Europe. And, you know, like, he was like, I'd like to help you. And I'm like, okay, sure, let's see where this conversation's going to lead on Messenger. And the next thing I know, the next thing I know, he's installing a phobia. You know, he's stacking all of these metaphors over and over and over and over again to get me in a state of despair. But he messed his sales sequence up. And I had to tell him, I go, you messed your sales sequence up, because he spent 2 days grooming me. And this is what John LaTourette taught us all to do, by the way. After 7 years of working with him, he wanted to know how people were doing it, you know, because the man's a master genius when it comes to sales.
Yeah.
He's a master genius, you know, and he used to have us break down every language pattern on the planet by transcribing like old videos of Bandler and then writing in exactly in brackets what he was doing from hand gestures to eye movements, you know. So he's a very detail-oriented person.
Right.
So having come from that background and being former military myself, I watch people and I watch their behavior. So I'm sitting there and he's just this phobic like expert in NLP and hypnosis with a following. You know, starts grooming me after 2 days. And then all of a sudden he goes, here's the consultation form. And I was like, no, you got this wrong. See, like,
hey, right.
I was like, you stacked the problem way too much. I'm in so much despair. Now I have to associate you to the only solution. So please, mm-hmm. How are you the solution? Because he never said that he was the solution.
Oh, my gosh. Like,
and I was just waiting for it, you know? I mean, like, this was not a visual experience, so I didn't get to see him hand gesture, you know, hand anchor himself. So, I mean, I watch Analog and everything. So I said,
yeah.
I go, you didn't build yourself if it's the solution, you know? And he instantly blocked me within seconds.
Now, wait, did you actually feel the effects of this? Were you, I mean, you describe it as what he was doing, but were you, was it going in at all, or are you able to dissociate?
Did I go into trance?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I definitely, I sit down with my mastermind. I have a group of old time martial arts brothers who are all NLP trained. When we sit and we kind of laugh at this stuff, it's hard not to. You're reading a metaphor. If you're not read a good novel and you're like, you're entranced, you're enthralled in it.
Yeah.
I was like, why do I feel so sad today? And then I was like, oh, that's right. I read like 8 metaphors of like shit piling up.
Right.
You know? I didn't go out and look at the beautiful flowers and the texture and the sunshine and feel the warmth against my skin and know there was somebody back at home that wanted to make love. You know, I didn't have that future pacing. No, it was everything's going to be in despair and you're going to end up poor and broke and bald.
Oh my God. I really want to read this now. That sounds amazing.
This is what people do. You know, they pull pain to such an extent, but they don't know the strategies. We talk about hypnosis. Hypnosis isn't everyday experiences, you know, and watch out for the, you know, the nut jobs out there selling hypnosis unethically. I've had a lot of people experience that too with hypnosis and erotic hypnosis and the hypnodomains, you know, like the hypnodomain fetish. I've had a lot of dominatrixes come to me in the past and want to be trained. And I'm like, are you going to make them into your human, like, ATM? Is this, like,
right.
Pay piggies? Like, what's going on here? Like, what is your interest? What is your criteria? What is your criteria for having hypnotic subjects? You know, I've been training people in hypnotic domination skills for over 15 years. And I do get the dominatrixes. And I have to tell them there is no right. There is no wrong. There just is. So please do not tell me this is do not ask, do not tell relationship. So whatever you plan on doing with these skills, please just make it right in your own heart and mind. Because there's nothing I can do. I can just teach and I can teach adequately. I mean, but at the same time, like going back to the exposing the phobic response hypnotist, it's like, yeah, he was just maybe he didn't know consciously what he was doing. Maybe he thought he was doing me a favor. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like 90% of the time people, even hypnotists, don't know what the hell they're doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Milton Erickson even talked about in many of his books, he just went with it, you know, as utilization. And then the next thing he knows, he's like doing something totally like parts integration, parts separation, some high level stuff, you know, and he just utilized it. So what, you know, how are we going to create, you know, behaviors when, you know, when we really got to go to the value system, the individual who's learning it. So.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I wonder with you in particular, Kaylee, do you think, are these men just idiots? Do they not realize? Do they just see you and go, okay, she's an attractive woman. She's talking about sex. I know a little bit about hypnosis. She mentioned hypnosis on her social media or website. Therefore, I'm going to see if I can pull her in. I mean, really, do they not see that you have a course on Keith Raniere and breaking down mind control? I mean, what do you think is going on there?
You know, I don't know what's going on. <don't>.
That's fair.
I don't know what's going on. I can only presuppose what's going on in the mind of these fans and readers. I have a lot of them that over the years have developed a fetish around hypnosis. So they attempt to learn everything they can from everyone, or they don't want to learn hypnosis. They just want to read about it and experience it. So yeah, just different types. And I don't know why they would, you know, most of them don't understand the level of interest that I have, like the Keith Raniere and the Nixium cult and yes. The research I've done. Yeah. They don't understand. I mean, I think I would be terrified to work with me in person.
I would be too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, you know what? I wonder if it's, I mean, look, I definitely think that, well, you, even on your Amazon page, you talk about how you were branded the dirty hypnotist. I mean, I think stuff like that might give men this idea that, you know, this weird idea that, oh, she's available. But at the same time, like, if you read your content and you really dig into it, you are definitely, I mean, it's very entertaining. I'm always amused by your email content and your your social media posts. I mean, it's quite. Did you ever do stand up?
Yeah, I was a stand-up comedian for a very long time.
Yeah, this makes sense to me. Yeah, no, you're very quick-witted. I mean, that's part of your brand, too, and I think that should scare guys off. But for some reason, no, I don't know, maybe it's cognitive dissonance. They don't know what to do with, like, the pretty hypno girl. I don't know.
I think that it's a good bait and switch. You know,
let's
lure them in, and then, you know, let's convince them they need to do something. You know, most people do need to do something with their lives.
Yeah.
This man has a t-shirt, goes, I love my hot wife. He's wearing a t-shirt saying, I love my hot wife. And he's older, and he's a gentleman, older gentleman. He's walked by my Mercedes. So that's a really cool shirt. So, you know, the big thing here is, yeah, I think the bait and switch. But, you know, one thing I really want my students to learn who comes to my seminars, my workshops, my classes, are those that actually want to learn, you know, that actually yes. want to learn the skills. There are some people out there that buy products that are just like, when, you know, will you get naked? And the answer is like, no.
Yeah, right.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. The answer is no. You know, but thank you for the question. you know, it's flattering. I use humor as a way to get people uninhibited. I find that if you can't laugh during sex, you're fucking the wrong person.
That's great. That's great advice.
Yeah.
There's laughing. Men get fearful, right, of being laughed at during sex. But you don't mean it like that. You mean it as a fun shared. It should be a fun experience for both people.
A fun shared experience. Yeah, a fun shared experience. One that is of hopefully out of the world. You know, orgasms, and most of the time people don't have profound or. Multiple orgasms because of those lingering inhibitions, those lingering fears of rejection, fear of mistrust, abandonment, whatever it might be, you can ask about 60 women on the street what the best sex of their life was like. And I can guarantee you it was because the person they were having sex with, they trusted, you know, and whereas men, they're looking for a totally different criteria.
That is so
there's some level of trust. Yeah, some level of trust. Doesn't matter what they look like, the men to the women. But there had to have been some level of trust.
Yeah.
Doesn't even matter what the sexual experience was, rape fantasy to vanilla sex. This had to have that trust. So how do you create trust? Well, hypnosis allows you to create trust right away. NLP allows you to create trust right away because there's rapport skills and pacing and leading and mirroring and matching. All those wonderful things that we learn, you know, the very basics of master practitioner,
Yeah.
So, yeah. And why aren't we utilizing them? I don't see a whole lot of people besides us seduction artists and pickup artists utilizing matching and mirroring and getting out of our own head to create the necessary physiological and emotional state in our lover so we can have the great sex with them. We oftentimes want to change our lover, but what we really need to change is our own behaviors and internal dialogue and thoughts. So they begin to match and mirror us. One of us has to be the leader. One thing that Dr. John Lutera taught me was that I would never be able to find romance or love outside of myself. That if I wanted romance or love, I'd have to create that. It's been a true experience, actually. And I've had many lovers in my lifetime and many relationships, and every single person, I'm the person that has to lead the relationship and romance and passion and ecstasy, because even with the most advanced lovers that I've had, they're somewhat emotionally disconnected from painful experiences in the past. So like we take our baggage and then we pretend that we don't have baggage, and then we bring it to a new person and we're like, let's unwind our baggage on this person. Let's just open up the bag. Here it goes. You thought you met someone totally different, but I am Miss Crazy, you know, or Mr. Crazy. It happens, you know. So so we got to help people. And that's like the key thing with human development and sexuality and hypnosis, is teaching them those skills of mirroring, matching, and mirror neurons, and utilizing your voice tonality and commands, and when to say things and when not to say things.
Where do you think the role of, because this is a thing that is, I mean, it's still blurry in my head, and even, you know, I won't mention the big names, but there are a lot of erotic hypnotists, big names, and sometimes they talk about bringing in trance work before the sexual encounter a little bit as the as part of the dating process, as like you mentioned, the seduction process. And I'm going, yeah, this is where you get those articles that are saying there's a group of men out there that are teaching men to hypnotize women into sex. And I've always, I don't know, I mean, I personally have always wondered about using conversational hypnosis and covert hypnosis in intimate relationships, whether it's, you know, with a partner or even a friend sometimes. But it's all communication too. So yeah, I'm curious, and Doug, I mean, you can chime in on this as well, but I'm curious what your thoughts are on the ethics of hypnosis as it comes to the mating ritual.
I think hypnosis is just normal. So I think when we look at it as something external, like something weird or something that we use to control or to do some funny things, then we miss the point of just that deep communication with another human being, or that connection of on another level, not just the physical. I'd say, you know, because we have psychic levels, or we have sexual levels, we have erotic levels, we have all these facets of being a human being. And when we use the science, or let's say the art of hypnosis, because it's something, it's a science in the sense you can study it, you can learn techniques, you can learn patterns, for example, from NLP, and use them in a normal kind of just your ability to communicate or to connect with a woman, or with a man in that sense. And in the from the setting up of let's say a relationship, that communication is what brings that trust that would be needed to allow that kind of deep release or deep connection with during the sexual act. So I'd say, from the approach to the bedroom, it's all a hypnotic ritual in that sense. When we remove the connotation or the negative aspect of saying, oh, hypnosis, then we realize that it's in everything. Like what Richard Bandler says, you know, hypnosis is everything. So any human interaction where there is any kind of relationships or I'd say metaphysically or let's say quantum physically, relativity, you know, in my meaning of the word relativity, I'd say it's just the way we relate with another human being. You know, it's not just about planets out there relating to each other. It's about us as human beings connect with another human being. So, you know, hypnosis is in everything. And when we ignore it, then we find all these kind of neurotic behaviors and aspects of the negative aspects that Kaylee was talking about there. When we talk about, you know, sexuality being used in pornography and all these other stuff.
Yeah, that is the idea of hypnosis as a form of expression is something that's landing with me. And also, I've never really thought about, you know, I guess, and this is just coming from, you study the courses, people put courses out there. I mean, I think of Kendrick Cleveland as a good example, who was, he put out the Dark Side course, which was all about the dark patterns of it. And a lot of other people have done it too.
Harlan Kilstein wrote that copy. That was some really good copy.
Yes, it was, yeah. Right? Yes, yes. It was really good. And it made you believe that there are look, if you look at the history, there are people out there using these patterns. But yeah, it draws you in. So then on the flip side of it, I'm going, well, you know what? If a man is with a woman and he starts doing a classic, Kendrick says he's the one that really leaned into this for business purposes, but the classic criteria elicitation. If I'm going to sit down with a woman, and I actually know this, I'm pretty sure this has been used in dating circles because Kendrick has talked about it. And you start going, well, what's important to you about, you know, the right partner? And then you repeat it back. And why is that important to you? And you keep going to it. There's a part of me on the inside that's going, oh, yeah, that's just a guy that's trying to get in her pants using criteria elicitation. That is a manipulative tool. But on the other hand, if you are eliciting that early enough in a relationship, wouldn't you want to be aligned with someone whose values were the same as yours? I mean, that could be the most profound connection you could ever have. So I do see both sides of it. Kaylee, what are your thoughts?
I think it really depends. You know, if your intention is to, you know, bed as many women as possible, good for you. I mean, who are we to judge? You know, there's a lot of, like I said, metaphors in which people live by, like the one is like, in order to get over her, you get under someone else, right? We hear these metaphors and they're used in language and copy and advertising that you see perpetuated by the seduction and pickup niche, right? Showing that they can have as many women as they want. But the real issue is, you know, how do you feel? Like, what are your values? Not her values, not her criteria, but what do you want? What will make you feel good today? You know, can you future pace what happens, you know, 5 days, 5 months from now, if you do XYZ and you look back at today as the day that you saw, you know, the behavior, if you continue that behavior, the real question, like I said, it's really understanding what you, the person that's learning these techniques at home, the listener, you guys talking to you, what is important to you right now, you, because you can learn every technique in the book. You can go out and elicit everyone's criteria. You can hand gesture and anchor that back to yourself. And she's not going to know, because the 1 to 7 bits of information at a given time, right? And then I'll be, so we don't really pay attention. So it goes unconscious in our filters. But I can tell you, I'm going to tell you my story. I have had people obsessed with me, and I've had bad things happen to me from lovers because I listed their criteria and I anchored it to me and I fucked with them. And I can tell you, it made me lose 90,000 fans. And also I had to move my apartment. I went to Vegas for a while. And I had to get cease and desist orders and restraining orders. And it made me really want to change my career for a very long time as a hypnotist, because I felt like I was targeted. I had people calling my office phone, attempting to procure sex over and over and over and over and over and over again, like as though I was an escort. And I was like, who are these? And then I found out the guy who was obsessed with me was putting my information on Backpage and every other escorting site on the planet. So just to fuck with me. So I fucked with him even harder. It was like spy versus spy until there was an explosion. We both passed threshold, which was law, you know, it was legal shit. Yeah. So no, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, like, I hope people learn that it is pretty detrimental and it can really screw people up. And I really did. I took a significant time. I even told Douglas too. I was like, I want to get out of the industry. It got me targeted. You know, it got me targeted. The seduction, hypnotic patterns, the pickup, you know, having skills that people are afraid of, got me targeted. And being a sex therapist got me targeted, you know? So yeah, I mean, like, so how do I deal with it? Well, I go back into the martial arts. I train every day. I train with my knife. I'm doing a knife competition October 5th. I would conceal carry, but it's the state of fucking California, so I can't conceal carry.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Anything to make myself feel safe. And this, you know, it's not like boogeyman's going to jump out of the bush. Let's be realistic. It is just a matter of safety concerns, as in who's coming into my office today and are they a predator or are they not a predator? Sex work is always going to be like that. 90% of women in sex work will either think of suicide or commit suicide at some point in their life. Strippers. Escorts,
that's what concerns
sex
me.
Therapists, sexologists.
It concerns me about OnlyFans, especially OnlyFans, like getting rid of it and then coming back. I mean, what do you do with all those women? Are they going to be okay at the end of this?
Narcissism, you know, like how many mirrors are they going to put up and stare at their face? You know, no, it's not sustainable. It's not psychologically sustainable to have careers where you're selling these types of products.
Yeah.
Age is not limitless. I mean, like, you know, fans move on to the next person and the next person, the next person. And just, it just feeds the external validation that a lot of pickup talks about, you know, and the nags and cutting down their personality and getting in there and being the one true hope of their, you know, confidence. So for me, it's just like, I think that we need a lot more female empowerment right now. Unfortunately, like a lot of men don't like that. They want women to be docile. And they're like, well, the women are already like empowered. They're going on OnlyFans. No, that's the actual direct opposite of being empowered as a woman. You know, being empowered as a woman. Yeah. It's, I mean, like, yeah. Overutilizing sexuality as a way of manipulation is not proper in our culture and should not be proper, but that's what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, it should be something, it should not be something that is, you know, used as a form of money exchange. Like if I want to have sex with someone, I want to have sex with them. I don't want something from them other than that sex or that intimacy. But we're in a culture now where people are using sex as a tool. And I think it's always been used as a tool, actually, for thousands and thousands of years to get something other than sex, you know, or intimacy or love or companionship, you know. I mean, I think there's some pretty insidious nature there. And I think it's going to cause a lot of depression, suicide, drug abuse, alcoholism. And it's going to, you know, deteriorate relationships, and not just the relationships of these OnlyFans models, but I'm talking about the relationships of the people actually sign up for these goddamn subscription sites.
Right.
I mean, how lonely of a fucking bastard do you have to be paying $9.99 to watch a woman get naked when you could clearly go out and pick someone up and learn, you know, hypnosis or learn pickup and be content with a warm, live body? It's because of the rejection. Wow. It's because of the fear, you know? So, yeah, I mean, people got to do what they got to do, you know? I think that ultimately, like, making a buck is more important to a lot of these people than their own dignity. But, yeah, that's kind of how... And I'm all for porn. Don't get me wrong. I'm friends with a lot of porn stars, good porn stars. I'm friends with Nina. I'm friends with a lot of these old school porn stars. And that's what they do for a living. But I'm talking about... there's something to do with like actually doing content that's interesting. And then there's like the webcam girls, you know?
Well, I was going to say, even Instagram, I mean, put OnlyFans aside, I think Instagram is messing up with people's ability to be intimate with others too.
Yeah. Right. I think so. I think we're really alienating a culture of what could possibly be something really wonderful. People connecting and having fulfilling sex, fulfilling intimate relationships, being able to communicate, their sexual needs and desires. But I don't know if we're ready for that as a culture. I mean, for many years we have been quarantined, 3 years? And so I'm sure that after, it's been a year and a half of quarantine, right?
It feels like it, though. Yes. When you said 3 years, I went, has it been that? I think it has. Yeah. No, it's been about a year and a half. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Wait, has it? Maybe almost. It's a year and a half. Wow.
So it takes they used to say it takes 21 days for a habit to go unconscious, right? That's been proven wrong. So it's like 90 days, right? So we've been seeing these masks, quarantined, isolated. Our relationships are deteriorating. My sister's a domestic violence attorney. She wrote an amazing article for The Bar about domestic violence having increased over quarantine. So like we're trapped inside with people we don't want to be with, you know, and we call them family.
right. Yeah, it is so, really a mess.
Yeah.
Something about the dark side. Because I'd say the dark side is part of being human, but like yin and yang, and if you take on a deeper concept, so even in hypnosis you find that you can take also the dark side, the dark approach, which is you could say the one-sided manipulation of another human's mind in that sense, ignoring also the fact that that other human being is also like you in that sense. So once they get like you, you are manipulating them in that aspect. There will be some response, there will be some repercussion, and they might respond on the dark side too, like what Kaylee was describing there, whereby they escalated this situation between them, and then it turns out to become negative and more negative, where everybody's losing in that sense. Whereas on the other side, if it had been set up on the positive side of communication, on that deeper aspect of being human, maybe they would have made some great relationship out of it,
I don't know.
So I'd say the dark side is part of the whole game, because if you just look at the positive of things and say, oh yeah, there's no weeds in the garden, and the garden's being overtaken by the weeds, that's a good point too. Not a solution either. So,
And most of the dark side patterns, like creating obsession and sex addiction and all of that is can be broken down into understanding human behavior. Exactly. But also the stuff in the dark side, a lot of it, like I said, is going into in NLP, we call timeline work, and just making them never see a good future, or making them only see a future in which they're going to be a sex addict. Like it goes back to the alcoholics, whose identity statement, this is why we're fucked up in our culture, because we're at identity level change, with all the gender norms. And also, if you look in history at the collapse of Greek civilization, the Roman Empire, the same thing during the collapse of their civilization was an identity scare with their sexuality. There's actually phenomena that has been written about in history that simultaneously, if there is like a political disrupt or the fall of a civilization, they're also having a lot of homosexuality and gender abnormalities that are happening. I'll have to send you the article, Greg. There's been lots of research on this. That so yeah, bizarre. The two go hand in hand. The two go hand in hand.
Oh, the Russian Revolution. I was looking at the sexuality.
Oh, did I send that to you? Yes. It's bizarre. My research goes pretty deep. I'm finishing my PhD, so I sit down and I really look at like what's happening culturally. And I think that we're in a change, and I think that there does need to be a voice, and who knows what kind of wave of sexuality we're in. But if people can, you know, figure out something that they identify with and band together and create a sense of belonging, a sense of uniqueness, a sense of I'm different than you, I am better than you, the them versus us. It's across the board in almost all these subcultures. Mm. And I'm going, oh, this is just basic hypnosis and NLP and copywriting. They're doing it naturally.
Well, that's what yes, that is it. Everybody is doing hypnosis. They're just not calling it that. And that's what I love about your work. And it resonates with what I'm trying to do out there, too. And I've done it on the show. I'm saying, hey, you know that thing that that person did where they said this to make you kind of feel bad about your situation, and then they hit you with a, and that's why if you sign up for this course, it's really an investment in yourself. I'm going, that is classic hypnosis. That is a classic pattern that is using, people sign up for seminars, they sign up, I mean, you read long copy. I love reading copy. I really do. I love reading those long sales. And I know they've become a little bit out of fashion now. People want quick hits, but those classic, like Frank Kern, the Harlan Kilstein stuff, I mean, David Garf, all those guys that were doing it, I just fall into a trance with it. I almost get to the point where I'm about to buy the product a lot of the time. And I hold myself back because I'm like, okay, I've been burned before. I know that on the other side of this, sometimes it's, you know, they send me the Google Drive link and it's like 4 audio files and that's it. But you know, the fantasy of it is really beautiful. That's what I'm all about embracing. I think that there is a role for, I used to call it intellectual escapism on this show very early on, but I'm kind of calling it conscious escapism. I think hypnotists are conscious escapists, or they can create an escape very consciously, or, well, in our case, unconsciously, but they can direct it unconsciously. That's sort of at least my rant on what I'm trying to do. But what are you both trying to do with the Institute? I mean, you know, we talked about sexual issues. We talked about the lack of intimacy between people. We know that the dark stuff does pull people in, but I don't think you want to sign up men or women that are rapists. Like I feel like you would filter that out.
I've worked with a rapist in the prison system while finishing my PhD. So really? I have worked with rapists and child molesters at the Institute that I've created. And the one thing that child molesters, and I've had a handful of them, I'm lucky to say only a handful, they always come to me and they're like, how can I have a normal life now? And so we stigmatize them in our culture. We stigmatize them. And so they can't get out. They can't get out of the loop. They're in a closed loop because they are in sex offender registries. And they terribly have an emptiness and they want it filled and they want intimacy, but they can't. And they never will get it. And that's the unfortunate thing because they know it. At the Institute, what we're looking for is we're helping people understand that there is an ethical sexual institute on hypnosis, that it is ran by highly educated people that really do care about them and their well-being. And we want them to identify however they want to identify and their sexuality without feeling that stigmatism of backlash or harassment from both sides or three sides or four sides or wherever it's coming from, the people who hate the gender norms to the people who are like pro-gender norms. We just want you to be you and do you and have fabulous sexual experiences and deep and profound moving experiences in your lifetime without getting caught up in misogyny or monogamy or any kind of frame. It's a fucking frame war in sexuality.
Right. Exactly.
You know, just be you, do you. What makes you happy in this moment? You know, that's the key thing. I'm all about being situationally aware, because once we move into the future, we create anxiety. If we move into the past.
Right.
The beautiful thing about the past is that it's over, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. And do you, I mean, look, it's sometimes I wonder, you know, you have so many different courses, so much material, Kaylee. You know, you have this Oceans of Sex Mind Control version 4. You have this Covert Under the Radar Secret Mind Control. I mean, look, obviously these are hypnotic titles. They're designed to pull people in and make you go. I mean, it sounds sexier to be covert, but if you'd really go, I mean, are you, how much of it is like, actually dark secret covert stuff, or is it really just is that part of the bait and switch too? I mean, how does it work with your product?
Bait and switch. Okay, so there are some always have tested live humans, and I think that's where, you know, I in judo we call it being kazush, which means being incongruent in NLP and hypnosis, meaning like we do things that we wish that we had not done.
Right.
So yeah. So I have done human experiments, and am I proud of what I've done? Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. I'm always about the outcome. Was the outcome, was the feedback? There is no, you know, failure. There's only feedback. I have done things like in dungeons and sex clubs and picked up people and left them. And I have dragged stilettos over freaking barbed wire fences to jump over fences in Saratoga away from people after picking them up. You know, yeah. So, and also the sex cults, I've done a lot of work going in as the guise of a follower, like one taste, OM orgasmic meditation, which is now on the federal watch list as a cult. A lot of tantric sex cults got busted by the feds. I went back and interviewed all the girls and what made them change, you know, what made them a good follower from people in cults related to money making, which oftentimes is, you know, like the never ending escape of the MLM. And what kind of language are they using to convince them? You know, like, I'm not going to name rich dad, poor dad, but I just did. But, you know, they have them open up credit cards. They have them open up credit cards, you know, just lines of extension to buy the product. It's the first thing they teach them the moment they come into the seminars. You can get a credit card. And then once you get that credit card, you can buy our $20,000 course on flipping houses. You know, how do people get scammed? I actually write about this. How do people get scammed? So, you know, I've done the best I can of staying ethical. The sexuality stuff, yeah, I'm a heartbreaker. There's one man, I can't break his heart, and that's my nephew. I just cannot break his heart. You know, he wanted me to stay in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and teach him more martial arts. And I gave him my nunchucks, and my sister was very upset about this. Real nunchucks. And so there's one man in my life that I can never break his heart. That and Douglas, of course. So, you know, the big thing here is how do we stay ethical and true to who we are? At the end of the day, does it sit right with us? If it doesn't sit right with us, you can change the past. You can have different feelings. You know, you can emphasize what did happen that was positive and good. And did you forever change that person? Are you leading impactful lives? Are you impacting their life? Hopefully doing more good than harm. You know?
Right.
So,
I mean, it is a very funny title if you read it. Covert Under the Radar Secret Mind. Like, you threw every single thing in there. I'm going, that sounds endlessly hypnotic. What is she doing with a title like that? There's something there's like poking at something, I feel, when you
put something like that. then interrogation and brainwashing I've studied extensively, and you know, different tactics of lie detecting, and I'm tactically trained. So I did a lot in the military, and my big thing is that, you know, we got to understand who we're dealing with. And when we learn these techniques, we got to be the chameleon. We got to be able to adapt. The most adaptable unit is the most functional, you know? So we got to adapt to people's behaviors and beliefs, walk in, you know, and if you're, let's say I live in the Bay Area, and the Bay Area has all these microcultures. And oftentimes I find myself in Berkeley, or I find myself in Oakland, or I find myself in Silicon Valley. And every time I'm in these different parts of the Bay, I have to dress differently, talk differently, gesture differently. Otherwise, I'm not accepted by the group. So the big thing here is, how are we utilizing these skills in order to gain acceptance and ultimately the ability to press upon their minds the influence we do want to have on them? Either it be to get them to live a happy life, or to obtain something, you know, whatever it might be that you're interested in, wealth, power, money, sex. But at the end of the day, like I said, you have to lay in bed and look at the ceiling and go, do you sit right with yourself? We want to stay congruent. And there's this awesome exercise called the Mafia Hitman Drill, where you can delete your past. So you don't have those. You can erase the past. Dr. Jean Lantrec came up with that because he literally was working with mercenaries at the time. He was a mercenary trainer, and he had a lot of students come in with severe PTSD and incongruence and feelings of self-hate and hatred and despise. And he sat one man down, and I was lucky to have witnessed his technique that he did. And he can just basically take someone and just rearrange the past from eye accessing. And a lot of, EDMR, EMDR.
Yeah.
So I got to see this while very, very young, like almost 20 years old. I'm almost 40 now. So the big thing here is like, how do we, like for me, peak performance, like we have a bad day. Well, tomorrow can always be better. You know, what do you want to achieve, and how are you going to break those down into easy steps you can do every day? Whether it be that we move the Institute to like Amsterdam, which I prefer to be in a sex positive culture, without laws and regulations that are happening in the United States. So how do we get the Institute to Amsterdam? You know, that's like the big question that I've always been thinking about. So what, you know, what are you working on? What is important to you? How do you stay covert? Well, you know, you stay covert by understanding the species you're dealing with, and then also getting a treasure chest of technique, right? And being able to really calibrate. It's not about what you say. It's about how you are observing people. And that's really what's going to make you a great hypnotist, is how good you are at pacing them, how good you are at understanding their eye accessing, their hand gestures, their analog, their breathing. Are they breathing high? Are they breathing low? You know, their natural triggers, where their metaphors that they speak, you know, their predicates, being able to rehearse back to them the cadence of their speaking, almost their tonality, their voice, becoming them, you know. So that's
a variety of things. You really that's a whammy of things that go into, well, really any kind of relationship. And it is,
well, then you got to watch out for the people who naturally do this, because that's called narcissistic BPD. So because they do it naturally. You wake up one day.
Yeah. Somebody did ask me about that. If you could work with a narcissist. I mean, you really can't, right? I mean, there isn't like a pattern for fixing narcissism covertly, because it's something in their brain.
No. Yeah, it's something that there is actually neurochemical. And it's and the beautiful thing is, you know, they're always like, just ignore the narcissist. No, the narcissist will just move on. Like, you can ignore them all you want, and, you know, like, they'll just move on to another target. It's just who they are, you know, because they're God and they, yeah. You're a piss on.
It's kind of weird, though. Don't you think that, I mean, look, I, well, actually, yeah, I'll say his name. Bandler, I think, has a lot of ego. I think he does. Sometimes I wonder if
it's
that
hard
guy.
Not to.
I wonder.
It's hard,
I mean,
not to when you're Richie Bandler.
That I guess that's true. I guess that's true. I mean, I wonder sometimes with these guys, who are the people at the top, if they are consciously using their ego to get the best out of everyone, which to me kind of feels like a bit of a BS excuse, but I guess it could be. Or is it something that they just can't control once they have that much power? Or were they just always that way?
I think, you know, after being around a lot of these charismatic leaders, they just stop giving a fuck after a while. A lot of them, you know, had come from very deep abusive households, or like there's like a pattern of childhood abuse and narcissism, right? And why they look to gurus in order to become who they are, powerful, rich, and famous, right? And so if you look back, there's a significance of rejection and abandonment at youth. I know personal stories, I'm not gonna say their names, but several people that travel the world that are very famous. One of them plagiarized Richard Bandler. His childhood started out with emotional and sexual abuse. So I think there's a lot of trauma and disassociation that become disassociated sociopaths. So they don't really care. But yes, I do love the ego. The ego is what protects you. You know, I wouldn't say that it is not necessary. But yes, I've been around a lot of like high level ranked martial artists who know that they could kill you with like just, you know, their thumb. That's, to me, when they have that type of ego and they walk in, they own the place, like Richard Bandler does, you know, it's a sight to see and it's a sight to experience. And then we are told to contain ourselves in society, you know, put on clothes, don't run around naked. It's kind of my concept. Well, don't run around naked within your personality. Don't be flamboyant, tame it down, you know, but really, should we? Really, should we? You know, like the flamboyance. I have a good friend who teaches pickup and he always like wears like a pink mohawk and he lives in LA and man, he's almost 50, but he's so bent out of shape. We all love him, you know, and he's still doing his pickup and he's a great hypnotist, amazing hypnotist. But he's never going to stop peacocking. He's going to die 90 years old and he's going to be getting Viagra and having mohawks. Because he's over-identified now with that level of creativity. And I think that's okay. I think we should just let people be people. That's the hard thing is when we get into relationships, oftentimes like that type of, you know, we get ambitious, we get we get that ego boost every time we go single and then we meet someone and we go home and they knock our ego down like 2 or 3 points because we realize we're human.
Yes.
You know, we realize we're human. And that's one thing I always saw with Doc and his beautiful wife, Lynn. Lynn was a school teacher. And the moment he got home, he was not Dr. John LaTourette. No, he was John and his wife. And
interesting.
He had honeybees. Yeah. So there's some docileness. It just depends on the context and who you're with. Right. So even the shark needs someone looking out for the nut, you know? So, yeah. So even though there's these egos, I'm sure that at one time, Leslie Cameron Bandler knocked Richard Bandler down a couple inches and got him to realize, you know, they were into gothic punk type stuff in his life. They're living in San Francisco.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, look, you've got this. I mean, I could really, truly talk to you for hours. I really want to delve into all the cult stuff at some point because I find Nixium so fascinating too. But you know what? In the meanwhile, I mean, what are you hoping with this institute, and even internationally? I mean, Is it all matters of sexuality and hypnosis? Are you leaning towards the kink scene? Do you do everything from approaching the opposite sex or whatever your preferences through consensual slavery, as some people have put it? I mean, what is the big focus for you both?
I'm gonna let Douglas answer what his focus is, and then my focus. So go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, Doug, tell me.
Yeah, I find like a hypnosis, or let's say sexual hypnosis, apart from being deeply liberating, is also a healing tool. I mean, liberating human sexuality. Yeah, because when we face that identity crisis of saying like, oh, am I hetero, am I gay, am I this, you know, they are all identity kind of issues, which you could say they could be driven by our instincts, you know, making instincts or whatever sexual expression we want to have or whatever experience that we want. And sexual hypnosis can be that kind of liberating factor of finding our humanity back, you know. I want to put it like how this guy puts it, becoming fully human. So I guess, you know, my take on becoming fully human is having that ability or that freedom to explore what's within ourselves, what's our feelings, what our emotions, what our sexuality, what is it that we are after, like really finding what is it that we really want. And when we don't put label on that, then we can just start accepting ourselves at that deeper level. And we wouldn't have any neurotic people running around doing some stupid thing, or narcissistic people doing stupid things. Yeah, so that I'd say is part of the healing process of, you know, that sexual hypnosis can help people with. And healing like the past traumatic experiences, you know, if people had bad childhood and, you know, they were misused or, you know, they were broken in that sense, you know, somebody violated that trust. Yeah, and with the hypnotic process, it's possible to heal those inner wounds, I'd say, you know, those emotional wounds or inner wounds, and become whole as a functioning human being. And, you know, with the ego part of it, you know, I find that can we as human beings not have an ego? Is it possible for a human being not to have an ego? Everybody has an ego in one way or another. Some people use their ego to put themselves down, you know, because they look at the small, you know, they look at themselves as small, you know, dependent or small citizen, you know, contributing to the big society or the big thing there, but they make themselves insignificant in that sense. So I'd say a healthy ego is also part of the whole process. Because when people value themselves without being over indulgent in the sense of, oh yeah, I am the one, or I am the, you know, the top influencer or something, if they don't put some this bullshit in it, then it can be some healthy kind of a form of expression that maybe is contributing to society in a different way. I'd say we can just help people explore themselves in that aspects. Of being human, or sexual, or, you know, and express themselves in a more healthy way, or even heal their past and maybe create a better future.
Yeah, so I like what you said about ego. A lot of people have ego in the bedroom, and it's not a place of ego, especially the S&M scene, you know, where they want to live out these fantasies of submission and dominance. And I think we should leave ego at the door when it comes to sexuality. I think we should utilize the trance state in order to become more euphoric and more open and more awakened. I don't really have any deep concerns about multiple partners. I think we should all experience multiple partners, but we should be in a very deep trance state. So we're turned off from the critical factor, our thoughts and beliefs about what we're capable of or body image, so we can be almost infantile again to experience ecstasy in a very different light, and to have that compassion for ourselves, because no one's going to give it to us. Our lover's not going to give it to us. So the trance state gives it to us, you know, and makes it so we can be free in our body movements. And this goes back to Wilhelm Reich and the function of the orgasm, to feel those spontaneous orgasms, because we feel so safe and we feel so secure with who we are, you know, and our imagination and our processes of being able to hallucinate, hopefully, a good experience. So at the Institute, we're looking to give people a way to explore on many different levels their consciousness, not just, you know, these fetish scenes of S&M. Those are all fun and games, you know, but at the end of the day, if you attempt to procure a fantasy, it's not going to be like what's in your head, you know?
Right.
It's never going to take place of what's in your head. Right, so you're right. Always going to be you're chasing something you cannot define. It's too controlled. So yeah, so I think that I believe in spontaneity. I believe that we can have sexual experiences as a group, it doesn't even have to be sexual in nature for it to amount to ecstasy. So at the Institute, we're going to be doing a lot of sexual healing retreats this year, probably one as time progresses. A lot of trance, will be in trance a lot. Hopefully people make sexual connections and find partners at the workshops that we do, at the retreats we do, because that's a key thing when you're looking for someone to bond with who's also going through a profound change. I mean, that's when real relationships happen. That's where real love happens, when two people are at the same level emotionally. It doesn't matter where they came from in life. They worked at Starbucks, the other one worked on Wall Street. As long as they're emotionally at the same level, they're going to have profound sex. So that's what we're doing. So we're doing a lot of healing retreats with COVID being the way it is, and SM market being the SM. And M market is totally oversaturated by dominatrix, as you say, they're, you know, certified in hypnosis. And so it's like, okay, everyone now is certified in hypnosis and a dominatrix. Okay. What about us old bitches that have owned the domain hypnosis for sex and erotic hypnosis?
That's years, right. You know? And we're going to link to that for everybody, hypnosisforsex.com.
We're definitely wanting people to heal during these times and to pair with someone that is going to give them a way of expanding their consciousness. So,
yeah. And you know what? Go ahead. I want to hear it.
Like the male multi-orgasmic, you know, making the man multi-orgasmic. That's like one of the things that most people overlook, because, you know, we tend to think of, you know, the male sexual function as just, you know, one-sided, in the sense of, like, you know, up and down and boom, the man shoots and then he's rolls over.
Yeah, that ejaculation can be separated from orgasm. Ejaculation can be separated from orgasms,
and you know, a man can have as much orgasms as he wants, you know, and without ejaculating. That's, I think, is a scientifically proven fact.
Yeah. At the moment, so. And like I said, Greg, we're in a culture here in the United States where there's a lot of inability to advertise sexuality because of the human trafficking laws. And now it's we're in a culture too where we're still very puritanical, and there's an identity crisis going on. Excuse me. So, you know, I'd really like to move the Institute to Europe 100% full time in the next year. So that's kind of my goal.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
No, it's all good. I mean, yeah. I hope we I hope we can help you get there, or at least by delving into your work and people can start seeing what you're doing. I know the other thing is that you have this course, one of your courses that you are still putting out on the market is this. It already has the name Forbidden Patterns. And it also has that great sales copy that I'm going to read through and just enjoy. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Forbidden Patterns is based upon consensual sex slavery, but not quite consensual. Because in the very beginning, there are setups in order to get the consensual behavior. So forbidden patterns is a set of techniques used to kind of rewrite someone's sexuality and get them totally turned on and tuned into you. One thing, like I said, if you, you know, if you're learning hypnosis, if you're learning NLP, it's better to know specifically that these things do exist. If you deny that they exist, then you're just set up for being convinced to do things out of your own control. So I lay it down pretty flat. I go through and I explain every process that could happen from, you know, meeting them on the street to taking them home and having wild and intense times with them. And also how to get them not to be so obsessed with you once you are done, you know, done with the experience. Some people don't know how to walk away or to have the proper boundaries to say, I'm done. What's next? You know, the experience is over with. I'm satisfied. Thank you. So from meeting them on the street to the moment you take them home, and also it's patterns associated with a lot of cults, sex cults that I have, you know, gone into as guys as a follower and figured out what the leader is doing sexually to get them to associate their orgasm to her. There was a lot of women who were, I guess maybe you could have seen this in more of the earlier millennium, but like the tantric sacred sex crowd formed these little like micro branched cults. And I went in and figured out what they were doing, you know, on a higher level, and then wrote about it and the pattern. So it's some good stuff. It's stuff that you can't really find anywhere else, mainly because of the stories and the breakdown of what's going on. Also, a lot of it is a lot of controlling orgasm, moving orgasm throughout the body. So it's not isolated to the genitals. Orgasm can be felt from head to toe. Orgasm can take on different synesthesia experiences, colors, all different kinds of fun orgasmic play. So that is that program. I really like that program. And it's our newest version. People right now can get it for a small fee if they're listening to this podcast. Otherwise, normally, I think Doug wants it to be like $2,500. Yeah.
Well, we will link to that for everybody. I mean, and again, you know, it's a question of how you end up using this stuff, but certainly learning about how it works, even if, you know, you're seeing that early stuff before it gets into consent is just as important to understand, because otherwise, you could be taken advantage of very easily. And I absolutely think it's important to get that stuff out there. My gosh, I have so many more questions for you about, you know, like conscious sexual leaders in the community, who's BS, how to tell the difference. What was Keith Raniere doing? You know, did he study? He studied NLP, yeah. I believe.
NLP extensively. I was connected to a couple key players in that. One of them was the lawyer to Raniere. Like how they were silencing witnesses for many years. And you know, the forced human trafficking and prostitution that was going on. That's one thing that, you know, we don't really want to talk about in, you know, the sex work niche, the human trafficking, the pimping that comes from a lot of these gurus. Even the human trafficking and the pimping that was associated with some of the cults that I had been in. And I'm very lucky that, you know, when the feds raided the temple of where the 40 women were taken and arrested, I wasn't there. I just wasn't there that day.
Yeah.
You know, I was very young. I was very young. And I was lured in under the premise of that I was going to grow spiritually, that I was going to awaken, you know, and I was a college student. So like, how are we, I was looking for a sense of belonging. I was looking for a maternal figure. you know, because a lot of people, they want to presuppose that we were sexually abused sex workers. Like, what happened to you? No, one of my best friends, amazing sex worker, grew up on a farm in Canada, raising horses to two Christian parents. Her dad and her are the closest. They still are. And she's still like almost 50 and she still gives like tantric massage every day.
Right. Know, right.
Let's not our presuppositions, our beliefs about sex work, like interfere. Cause it, the, you know, the cover sometimes doesn't match the book. So, yeah. So, you know, a lot of this stuff, I'd be happy to talk to you about, like actually go in full on deep diving into cult and sex cults the next time, and whorehouses and brothels and the stuff that I've toured and observed in my lifetime. So to get many ideas and also to understand what was happening, and as a form of social psychology and social psychology experiments. So yeah, that's open to you. If you guys are interested in hearing about that, I'd be happy to.
Yeah. And I know you have a course about that, and I definitely want you to come on again and talk about all that stuff.
I have a podcast called Kiss Me Deadly, which is all about sex cults and human trafficking.
Oh,
so yeah,
that's amazing. I got to listen to that too. My gosh, you have so much content. I mean, really, when are you going to, I want to read the unreleased books. I have to read them. I want to know. I want to know the techniques you haven't put out to the public. That's intriguing me right now. I mean, will they ever come out?
You know, I have sat down with like Dilts and all of them and been either scrutinized in my lifetime for the work I've done, told I could be a better trainer if I would go clinical. So to me, it's like, I might release them. I might not release them. I might say, fuck it, and just release it eventually in my lifetime. So we'll see. Yeah.
Wow. We'll see. Maybe going soon. I know. Yeah. Everybody needs to check out KayleeDubois.com as well as hypnosisforsex.com. And of course, the Forbidden Patterns course, if you really want to understand this stuff. And Doug, I mean, are you, do you have anything right now? Are you, should we just follow Kaylee's stuff to learn more about the Institute, or where can we learn about you?
Let's follow Kaylee stuff.
Yeah, he's gonna be there. He's gonna be on. We're moving things around at the Institute. I'm just the founder now. We're gonna be revamping the website here shortly in the next couple of days to show all the instructors. We have a handful of instructors.
Oh, awesome!
And I'm stepping down from the plate. So, like I said, I'm just the founder of the Institute of Hypnosis and Sexuality. It's been something I've developed over 20 years, but I also think that there's some amazing trainers out there that can teach people wonderful skills. So it's just a matter that we have the Institute in the world. That's all that matters. That this does exist and it will always exist. So
I love it. I love everything that you're doing for hypnosis. I love everything that you're doing for humanity. It's all very important to have these conversations. Even if you disagree, it's important to know that this stuff is out there and it is happening in the background. I'm grateful for you, Doug. I'm grateful for you, Kaylee, for coming on. And this has been very, very enlightening conversation. I definitely learned a lot.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Kaylee Dubois and Douglas Alexander. You heard his name. That's a great hypnotic principle. Make something seem a little bit more important for vague reasons. Pull you into that trance of mystery. Not something I've ever done in this show. Wink, wink. Hey, those two were fantastic. I want to thank Rodney McGilvery for the theme music. If you enjoyed this podcast, hey, I appreciate the review on Apple Podcasts. I really do. Now go out and wink at somebody today. If you don't get arrested, it might just be romance.